Welcome back to another riveting episode of The Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I, of course, am your host, Brian J. Rowan, and joining me, as always, my two wonderful cohorts. There's staff writer for The Film Stage, Danny King.
Hey.
And coming to us very special, live via some sort of road trip, is Nick Newman, associate editor. Nick, how you doing?
All right.
All right. I guess he's all right. This is a unique opportunity for us because Nick, are you currently actually piloting the car that you're in?
Yeah, I am. I'm coming up to an easy pass, so I have to hold up the thing to the window.
You're supposed to mount those to the windshield.
But it's not mine, so.
Oh, okay. That might be fraud. We might be breaking many laws bringing you this special episode of the Film Stage Show, but whatever. Also, you know, if we do distract Nick to the point that he crashes, first ever on-air death on a podcast. So there's a lot of opportunity for some crazy stuff to go down. But outside of the strangeness that's going on, we are also going to just be doing our normal show, which, to anyone who's just joining us, we will give a news discussion slash movie discussion topic first, about 10 to 15 minutes on that, and then we'll be launching into a feature review of a new release from this week. Today we will be talking about Magic Mike, the male stripper film from director Steven Soderbergh, starring Matthew McConaughey, Channing Tatum, Olivia Munn, Alex Pettifer, and a couple of other people that I've seen in a lot of other stuff, but whose names I don't know. But yeah, so before we get into that, I'd just like to say, we know we have a number of subscribers on iTunes, and if you're one of those people, thank you, tell your friends. Also, don't forget to give us a comment and a rating. Also, if you'd like to speak with us in any way, we've gotten a few emails already, but I always like to encourage more. You can get in touch with us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. Don't be afraid. We're not as ornery as we sound on this show. Except maybe Nick, who might be dead.
I just got to make my merge here. I'm on the way to our editor-in-chief's wedding, actually.
So... I mean, we appreciate your, what is this, insanity? I guess it's a commitment to, you know, helping us out here. That's, it's interesting.
So,
it's good.
So when his children listen to this in, like, 10 years, we can sort of have a record of that wedding day other than photos and video.
I was about to say, this is going to be a transmedia event for them.
Yes.
But yeah, so our discussion topic for today, as we all know, Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man, I should say, so we don't mix it up with the original Spider-Man, which came out, what, 10 years ago? The Amazing Spider-Man will be coming out on Tuesday. Already some reviews have come out. Many have been positive, some have not been positive. And yet, again, this happened with the Avengers. We found that there is a faction of people who are really willing to defend this film, many of whom without ever having seen it, just against any ill will whatsoever that we've... incurred from the critics, I guess? I don't know. It's a geek possessiveness of nerd properties. That's a pretty reductive way to put it, but, you know, whatever. And I know it was talked about with the Avengers, but it's come up again, and I feel like this is the type of thing that is just going to keep happening, especially as more and more, like, niche properties are adapted. And I wanted everyone to give their opinion on why do you think it is so important for these people that there be a consensus regarding a property that they find, I guess, personally interesting to them? Especially given the fact that, like, the failure of this movie will not kill Spider-Man, just as I'm sure any failures of the Avengers, though that's obviously not happening now, would not have killed the Avengers. So what is it that they're defending? And have you personally ever felt that way about any film? And did you do something about it? Or did you do what a normal person would do and just kind of keep it to yourself until you actually saw the film and could make a judgment? So, Nick, since you're the one who's risking your life the most to be here, let's get your opinion first, just in case you do die at some point during this recording.
Well, I have another advantage because I've actually seen The Amazing Spider-Man, and I've also spoken to the producers personally, so
well,
got that going for me. I know. Well, I do think that this whole geek possessive what have you is the result of a geek saturation in the popular culture. I don't think that even 10 years ago we had the kind of it wasn't as widespread as it is now. I remember when the first Spider-Man came out, you'd see a few trailers and a few TV spots, and that was kind of it. But now, in today's culture, you have trailers, you have TV spots, you have stars on the Today Show, and there's Spider-Man Week in New York City. It's crazy. So I think that I think people have this possessive feeling toward this property, and when it becomes a big thing that people are discussing, there is sort of the desire to sound like the smartest guy in the room. And I think that when there are criticisms of the property in any way, there is sort of the need to relay those criticisms, which in themselves are ridiculous because they're coming from people who, again, haven't seen the film. There is a need to sort of back it up with saying, oh, well, you don't understand how this works. I know Spider-Man. I know the character, how his story is supposed to function, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that we're seeing this at its very worst right now. You have Rotten Tomatoes commenters who are the scum of the earth are discussing, who are criticizing reviews of a movie that they have not seen, and they're completely attacking the reviewer, and it is infuriating to read. You guys have read these, right? I've read one or two.
I know that I was following a little bit the drama that was going on with Devin Faraci, I believe, over at Badass Digest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was getting laid into for a while.
Right.
But he should
Did he write a negative review?
It wasn't even him. It was another reviewer on the site. And people were saying that Devin, forced him to write a negative review.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, I don't know. But I do know what you mean about the, I don't know, this kind of, insider's privilege would be a word for it. Because when I got panned a little bit for only giving a vaguely positive instead of a rapturously positive review for the Avengers, I had that same issue. There's people like, well, you don't know these people. You didn't grow up with this. You don't know. You don't understand the story. It's like, well, unfortunately,
I think it's when you insisted Lockout is a better film. I think that was the tipping point.
I mean, I probably threw a little too much fuel on that fire, but I would still stand by that. I don't know. It's just one of these things where it's like, I understand that this is something that you're coming from, and it's like any adaptation. Like, if you've read the book, you might understand better. This is a problem I had with a lot of people in The Hunger Games. But you have to realize that the movie is the movie, and if I'm not getting what I need from the movie to enjoy the movie, that's not my fault for not doing enough extracurricular reading.
Right. A lot of people assume there's supposed to be some sort of narrative transposition between mediums when it comes to adaptations, but that's completely false. I think you look at a movie like The Amazing Spider-Man, which I won't get into too much because we'll probably review that next week, right?
Yes, that's our thing for next week.
Right, I won't get into it too much, but I guess there are moments where there's sketchy character beats and some of it doesn't entirely make sense, and I could almost see a comic fan saying, well, it's in the comic if, the lizard does this because, the same thing happened with Watchmen a few years ago. Do you guys remember when that happened?
A lot
of people complained that it was too confusing a film. As someone who's read the graphic novel multiple times, I had no problem. Obviously, I had no problem following it because it's such a slavish adaptation. But I was a little guilty of saying, well, it was in the comic. It makes sense there. But that was 3 years ago, and I'm wiser now.
Yeah. Well, there's a difference between, I think, explaining that and excusing that, because if someone really is trying to say, I watched the movie Watchmen and this part didn't make sense, so therefore the comic must have sucked as well, then you can say, well, actually, in the comic they do explain that.
Right.
But if you're just saying, well, the movie Watchmen didn't make sense, but I'm ambivalent towards the comic, then it doesn't make sense for someone to come in and be like, well, you'd enjoy the movie more if you read the comic. I could enjoy a lot of things more if I read a lot of other things, but it's not the point of a film. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's weird to me that people become that possessive, and this is why I wanted to talk about this specifically. Have either of you, well, I guess Nick, you just gave us a little bit of an example, but have either of you ever felt compelled to defend something based purely on either previous engagements with a related media or your pure expectation alone? This is a tough question because it requires some soul searching and actually realizing that we're not as, perfect and awesome as we claim to be. I will say that I'll get the ball rolling. I put this out there. I've given some people some crap for making prejudgments against The Dark Knight Rises.
Right.
But I'll then temper my own self-recrimination by saying that I've given them crap for the same reason that I'd give someone crap for giving a critic you know, stuff for their review. No one's seen it yet, or at least me and this other person haven't seen it yet. And it seems weird to be formulating your responses to it without having seen it. I don't feel like I should have to say that to someone. And again, I'm probably a little more insistent with The Dark Knight Rises because I've seen The Dark Knight and Batman Begins and enjoyed that. And I loved Batman the Animated Series as a child. So I think I'm just, I'm a DC fan. I'm not a fan of Marvel. I'm just going to throw that out there. That's almost like giving away your political affiliation nowadays. But, you know,
we're on the same page.
It's one of these things, you know, I'm trying to make myself seem better than I am. Probably. I want people to go in giving it a fair chance, but I don't think I've ever felt this like blind need to say, you know, oh, but you're like, Batman's awesome. You know, you're just being mean because you like the Avengers. Like, I'm not doing that. Have you ever done anything in that vein?
Does Danny want to go?
You
did the Watchmen.
Well, just to make a more like general comment, I think one of the strange things about this is that you have this like obsessive geek like circle of people, and then like if they're like a very inclusive group, they should be content if other people don't like it, because that's almost the point of like a geek group.
Yeah.
So like it's kind of weird that they get like they take it personally when that almost helps define like their identity.
Yeah, it's almost like
if other people don't like it.
It's almost like, you know, the goths in high school being upset that other people weren't like saying how crazy and cool they were. Like right. I think that might be another thing. It's a lot easier for you to say that someone doesn't get it than to possibly admit to the fact that it might not be universally awesome. Like there's this idea that if people could just be on your level, then they would think it was awesome too. And so it allows you to have a kind of superiority over them.
Yeah.
Okay, now I gotta call Nick back.
Jesus.
We got pretty far.
Please
that
enjoy
time.
Enjoy this Verizon ringback tone while your party is reached.
I hate this song by the end of the day.
Hey.
Hey, you're back.
That was completely my own fault, don't worry. Someone called me and I tried to... I don't know how to operate a cell phone. But yeah, don't worry.
You
about
don't have
that.
Three
that,
hands.
That was me.
Well, we just... And so I said, you know, it's a superiority thing. Like, you can claim that it's awesome, and it doesn't have to be a matter of opinion. It's a matter of objective fact, and so that gives you a feeling of superiority. So, I mean, that's kind of my problem. I don't care about anything that much. It's a terrible thing to say, but I'm very disconnected from properties. I don't have a lot of brand loyalty, except to, like, jeans and shoes.
I see that as a good thing.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think another personal thing for me, getting a little bit outside of the geek thing, a lot of people, whenever they see a Martin Scorsese film that doesn't involve gangsters, I feel a need to defend that. I don't know why. I don't feel like I should have to, but I feel like people expect him to deliver something, and the second that they say he's not doing that, you know, if people were calling Departed the best film since Goodfellas. I was like, have you watched his other films since Goodfellas? There's a pretty freaking awesome films in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the problem is that there's not really even a way to, again, I have to keep saying, like, the point of these discussions isn't to fix the problem. It's just to address it and kind of foster a discussion and a conversation. Because there's no way you can stop people from acting this way.
Yeah.
Unless you make everyone as... Yeah, I was going to say, like... Violence or finding a way to make people dispassionate about everything.
See, there's something Batman would approve.
That's why I like side with him. No quips, no like cute acrobatics. Just punch someone in the face.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, any other thoughts on this? Does anyone actually want to come out and say who they might be fanboyish enough to defend sight unseen?
I would say, I remember, just to go back to films that were released in 2009, I remember when Inglourious Basterds premiered at Cannes and it got kind of a mixed notice. And what I kind of kept saying was that, well, I mean, you know, Tarantino films, sometimes you have to give them a second viewing or you have to let them grow over time. And, do you know what I mean?
I
kind of posited that argument. Maybe I shouldn't have, but I was younger than I'd care to say at the time, and you know, who listens to the opinion of somebody at that age? So there was that, for example. But I find that today I'm a pretty level-headed guy. Like, when the first negative reviews of The Dark Knight Rises come in, probably from someone who writes for a New York outlet, because New York critics tend to not like Christopher Nolan for whatever reason, I'm not gonna be like, that guy's a fucking idiot. Fuck him. Like, you know, come on. Like, we can't. If you are an adult, you can't do that.
But even you express shame a little bit over your estimation of Inglourious Bastards, and all you said was sometimes you have to give it some time and revisit it. Like, uh-huh. It's kind of the same thing when people were talking about Tree of Life. Like, my biggest defense of that was, well, you know, Malick's not for everyone. Like,
yeah, that's different. But
even in our, like... Go ahead.
I think yours is better, though, because that's just saying, that's not calling somebody stupid because they don't like Tree of Life. You're just saying, well, you know, it just wasn't for you.
Yeah. Danny, have you had any moments?
I find that, like, recently I'm, like, a bigger defender of Clint Eastwood than a lot of people. Like,
you love Jagger.
I mean, I don't love it, but, like...
I know, I'm joking.
Yeah, but, like, I just... Like, when I read reviews of his new movies, it just feels sometimes like people are just out to, like, rub their teeth, like, through his movies, that they just, like, want to pan them so bad. And, like, to me, like, J. Edgar, like, you know, it's, like, it was fine. Like, I remember sitting through it, and, like, it's a pretty quick, like, piece of work. I didn't really have any big problems with it, and then I read about it, and it's, like, people are ready to just call it, like, the, like, most lazily directed thing out there. He's just one, like, but that's been, like, a few times. Like, even Hereafter I liked. And, like, Gran Torino, like, people will say, you know, all the other actors in it are terrible. And it's like, I don't know, like, I still like the movie. It's like,
yeah.
So I'd say he's probably the one where I've had, like, the most recurring, like, feeling of defense towards.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, so we're not just pretending we're better than everyone else out there. We're willing to admit our own faults. And that will draw this discussion to a close. If you have anything that you'd like to add to this discussion, if you have any confessions that you'd like to make, if you're one of these people who's secretly out there donning a Spider-Man mask and trying to egg critics' houses, and you'd like to defend yourself, get in touch with us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. However, now is the time when we don our sparkly underwear, get on that stage, and start talking about Magic Mike.
Good evening. You live here?
Yeah.
Yeah? What's your name?
Kim.
Kim, can you move back for me, please? We keep getting complaints of noise and underage drinking. Everybody sit down. We're going to be here for a while. You don't have anything sharp on you that I can stick myself with, do you?
No.
Good. Because I do.
The businesses that I manage, they deal exclusively in cash.
Wow, busy guy.
We welcome to stage the one, the only
Magic Mike.
You are the husband that they never had. You are that dreamboat guy that never came along.
So Magic Mike, the second film to come out this year by director Steven Soderbergh after Haywire. This one stars Channing Tatum as a male stripper who takes Alex Pettifer under his wing to show him the ropes at a nightclub owned by Matthew McConaughey, and just kind of their misadventures, their time. It's difficult. It's not a movie with a plot so much as it's a movie with people doing things. And if you invest in those people, I think that you'll get a lot out of it. It kind of tips the hand towards what I'm going to say about the film. Danny, why don't you tell us, start us off here, and let us know what you thought of Magic Mike.
Yeah, I'm a big fan as well. I don't know how much of a fan you are yet, but to me, like, the feeling I got while watching it is that Soderbergh is in a place right now where he's so good, and yet he can still make things look so effortless. So it's really unique how this film kind of just glides along, and it feels like he's just making it off the cuff, which he probably is. But then when you actually, like, consider how difficult some of the stuff in it to pull off, it's kind of amazing that he makes it look so easy. Like, I mean, all the performances he gets are, like, really, really good. A lot of them are against type, and he just makes it look, like, so easy. It's kind of incredible in a way.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. There were times when how you can say a director gets lazy and they're just doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
There are times when I almost felt like that about Soderbergh, but it doesn't seem like it's easy what he's doing, but he makes it look so easy. Mm-hmm. I feel like he should be challenging himself more than the insane challenges he's already set out for himself. Nick, what about you? What did you think of this film?
Can you hold on 1 second? I have to check where my room is.
Wait, have you arrived?
Yeah.
All right, you made it.
Yeah, I have to check with the clerk. So if you can hold on for a second. Hi, I'm at the wedding. I'm not sure what room I'm in. Is
your last name?
My last name's Newman. Newman, but I think it should be under O'Donnell or Healy.
This is staying in the podcast.
Very interesting here.
It's like a whole other world that we're being given a glimpse into.
You can't? You have Dennis?
I do have Dennis.
Okay. Where is he?
I can't tell you, but I can't turn off.
Okay. Hold on a second. Okay, thank you. All right, bye. See you soon. Thank you. Hello.
Hey. Having some trouble?
Yeah, it was just I don't know what room I'm in. I think I have an idea.
Okay.
I really hope you just keep that in the podcast. Anyway, so you want me to
delete it?
So while I'm waiting for my elevator, do you want me to discuss any Steven Soderbergh films?
What?
Is that what you'd like?
Yeah, like what do you think of Magic Mike?
Oh well, I loved it. I think it's maybe his best film since Ocean's 11. I'd go back that far. I think it'd make a really interesting companion piece to The Girlfriend Experience. You guys have seen that, right?
I have not, actually.
I saw that.
Right, because both are... it's a very Soderbergian idea, I think, where you're playing with the idea of selling yourself to make other people happy and to get people to like you, and the way it plays with personal image. And it's very interesting how you're taking these, you know, these hunks of band meat. I hope whoever can overhear me in the hotel heard that. You're taking them and you're playing them up as objects, which is, I think, so much more interesting than a lot of people are doing it credit for. And, hey, there's Jordan. I don't know. I just, the way it plays with personal image and the way it talks about how it's sort of impossible to break out of this life. The movie is surprisingly dark, which I was not expecting.
Yeah, that's a good, yeah.
I can't remember the last studio film I saw that was this daring and tried to do this much and did it so well. I think this is easily the best studio film of the entire summer. I don't think it's even close, actually. So yeah, I'm a really big fan. I obviously have more to say, but I'm trying to... this is a really weird situation right now, is all.
No, it's fine. We can say more when we get into spoilers, which, should be pretty soon. It seems like we're all going to be unanimously positive about this, which... Not something I was expecting. Soderbergh is a great director. He was able to elevate the pretty middle-of-the-road Haywire just through his sheer style. So I was kind of expecting the same magic for Magic Mike. Hey, I was just surprised that it worked so well. There were just so many things in this film where it begins and it just like grabs you and brings you along. And like you were saying, the actors... are fantastic. Channing Tatum, I finally had to learn how to say his name correctly, like I said, because he really is becoming one of my, I won't say favorite actors, but he's a fun actor. And it's possible that in time, if he continues to take projects like this or 21 Jump Street, you know, he's going to make himself a screen presence that you see him in something and you'll go, yeah, I want to see that because I like him. You know, not a heavyweight like Christian Bale or Michael Fassbender, but a reliable, interesting lead actor. And it's weird that this is the movie that made me realize that so heavily, considering that now I've got this like image of him just constantly dancing and taking his clothes off. So it's weird,
right?
And honestly, like I don't know, I never saw the original, what was it, Step Up, that he was in.
No.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
Yeah, but his dancing in this, like, crazy.
Impressive.
Yeah. Like, but does he come from some kind of background like that?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously he used to do this in his line of work, so...
Wait, what? Is that serious?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mel Strickland, he used to do this. You didn't
okay.
know that?
No, I think I'd heard that before, but I'd never gotten it verified. So, wow, okay, that makes a lot of sense to me. Everything is falling into place. But the greatest thing is that this isn't a movie where it's just like coasting on that male stripping. Like, there's a scene early on when Pettifer's character, Adam, is sitting down and all the male strippers around him are getting ready. And there's just this ease of the scene and how all these people are interacting. And everything works so well that at some point it actually stopped being like that male stripping movie and just mm-hmm. became like an interesting story that I wanted to follow, filled with people who I found interesting.
Right.
And again, I feel like a lot of that has to do with Soderbergh and just his style and craft.
That almost reminded me of like one of the backstage scenes from The Wrestler, where they're kind of just hanging out before the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow, I hadn't made that connection. It's really good.
It's weird because they're like male strippers, but like it was really similar to me. I think because that one guy was just so buff, like he looked like a wrestler.
Oh, the guy with the long stringy black hair?
Yeah, Tarzan.
Good old Tarzan. And then just again, there's humor in this movie. There's some good dramatic beats. I don't know, like this, the way that some things are framed. I mean, like, Soderbergh does some interesting stuff in this film. I'll save it for spoilers to say like the thing where it took me like a minute maybe to figure out what the hell was going on. But when I did, I couldn't stop laughing. But yeah.
You're referring to a plastic pump?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, yes. I saw this on the biggest screen in my entire theater. So that was good.
Yeah. Before we get into spoilers, I guess, are there any negatives to this film? Does anyone want to throw out anything just to like balance our seemingly unanimous rapturous praise?
I did find maybe the cinematography is a little, it does kind of look like somebody urinated on the camera before.
That's a lot more harsh than I thought.
I kind of like that aesthetic a little bit, but it can get a little bit wearisome, I find.
I can agree with that. There were times when I thought the cinematography was obvious, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not as natural to the story as you'd expect it to be. But, I still liked it. It still made for some beautiful shots. It's just, I guess that's probably what my one thing would have been.
Right.
I feel like it might drag a little bit in the middle. But again, because it's supported by all these performances, I was still in it. You know, I wasn't checking my watch. Danny, mm-hmm. did you have any negatives that you'd like to throw out?
Well, this isn't really a negative, but like Nick and you also mentioned a little bit about like how like daring and dark it is, but like the screenplay also has these like common kind of relationship moves, and it's like surprising how much you kind of fall for them and want them to work themselves out. So yeah. it's like this weird mix of like really daring individual scenes with like an overall trajectory that's sort of familiar.
Yeah, it's a very familiar story.
Yeah, so it's like, and it's not something I would say is a flaw, but like it's something that
it's not a wildly original film.
Yeah,
but it's,
that's very much how I felt about Haywire, actually, because it was a very like the skeleton of the script is not that impressive, but it's more about the specifics and the scene beat-to-beat moments that make it stand out and make it feel different. Because if you could easily take that script and make it a direct-to-DVD movie and then do Bat and Eye, but when you get Steven Soderbergh directing it and he's doing all his fun stuff, it goes on a whole other level.
Yeah, and we were talking, I think we talked last week about kind of the different directors who either are slaves to the story and they need a good story to fill out their visual style, and then the directors who can take something and inject it with something else that will elevate it. And I think mm-hmm. this film and Haywire prove that Soderbergh has that capacity,
mm-hmm.
and he could take, like, you know, Haywire is basically a direct to DVD film, and this could have been direct to DVD just nonsense with a bunch of guys getting naked, but he somehow works an alchemy that makes it one of the best films that I've seen this summer. That's weird to say. Literally saw this like 2 hours ago, but it's a surprisingly good film. Maybe not as original as it could have been, but because of the actors, because of the direction, because of some of the chances it takes, it ends up being really well. And now that we've done that obliquely, we can get into the spoilers to really dig into what we like and possibly, you know, some more of the obviousness of the story. So if you haven't seen this film, I think it's obvious you should get out there and see it. And
I think it's making a ton of money, too.
I would not be surprised.
Yeah.
I think my showing was sold out.
Yeah, I heard it's approaching maybe 50 million for the weekend.
That is ridiculous.
Which is insane, well, yeah.
I also feel like a lot of people who are going to see this are going to be, like, I guess bait and switched, maybe.
Yeah.
Because I was expecting, I mean, like, even though I knew Soderbergh was directing, I feel like I was expecting kind of like a Coyote Ugly. So, like, when one of the first words that you hear in the movie is fuck, I was like, oh, wait, this is rated R? Like, I've stopped paying attention to what movies are rated nowadays.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was like, oh, well, this is going to be weird. And then just the more it went on, I think it was a little, like we said, it's darker than you'd expect a movie like this to be. Like, these aren't small stakes. But yeah, wow. I would actually be really happy if this was successful.
Yeah.
I think it'll encourage studios to do more stuff like this. Also, just happy that a lot of people are going to see one of the best Matthew McConaughey performances that I can remember in recent memory. But yeah, let's get into spoilers. Let's talk about this film a little bit more. I guess, yeah, I don't know if there's like an easy way to say this. There's a scene where they're in the back of this this male strippers club, and there's two people having a conversation, and very slowly but surely you realize that there is a penis pump operating at the foreground of the shot. And whereas another movie might make this like a very obvious gag, like there might be like, I guess like the most obvious, it's like analog would be like Austin Powers, where they just keep talking about it and bringing it up. Like, this is just something that's happening and no one in the scene except for the new guy is paying any attention to it. And he's not even saying like, oh my God, there's a man whose penis is in a pump. Like, and things like that, I think, as weird as this is going to sound, helped the movie maintain a grounded atmosphere for me. Just because, like you were saying about The Wrestler, like, it would be very easy to make these people buffoonish, but by showing kind of the behind the scenes, just like natural things that are happening, and like everyone's reacting to them in such an easy way, for some reason that actually helps it with me. And I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think there's something like, I felt a similar thing in the opening scene where it starts off and he's talking to Olivia Munn for a little bit, and then like there's a shot that shows you that there's another girl in the bed.
Yeah.
And it could have been like the first shot could have been, you know, overhead showing all three of them in the same bed for like a threesome joke. And instead, like, he shows it so subtly where like Channing Tatum and Olivia Munn are just like getting dressed, and like you briefly out of the corner of one shot kind of see the other woman there. It's just an example of how Soderbergh's direction is so not interested in like amplifying the material, like sex, drugs, stripping. Like, it's more subtle.
Yeah, and it definitely, like that scene in particular, it escalates because he wakes up and you kind of think he's alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then Munn gets introduced, and then there's the third woman.
Yeah.
And then they tease out the relationship that brought them to this point. And like, yeah, it's things like that, you know, like you said, and a lesser person might have just like been overhead shot three people in bed. And I feel like the movie is just chock full of things like that, where moments where another movie might have exploited them more for some kind of reaction that's not earned so much as it is just like brought to you through sheer dint of shock and like unexpected nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
He's very much playing to his audience in that sense, though, because I do think the way it's framed, it is meant to get sort of a reaction from you, because everybody in my crowd went, oh, and you see the naked woman. But I find that it's more about not so much how he introduces it, but how he just keeps playing the scene. How it's just sort of, it's not an issue of, oh my God, there's a naked girl there. It's, well, there's a naked girl there, but two people are talking, and you should be listening to that right now instead. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly like what was happening with the penis pump scene.
Right, and that's what I mean about how with Soderbergh, it's not, you know, sometimes he'll take scripts that, I mean, I think this is a very good screenplay, but he'll take screenplays sometimes that are not great, and he'll work his Soderberghian magic and make them into something great. And that's a perfect example of it, because I think if you just got some studio hack, what are they going to do with that scene?
Yeah, no.
You know what I mean?
Freaking yeah. Hack.
Some jerk who's just going to come in and shoot this thing like a home video. And what did we think about the, I guess, the trajectories of the relationships and the people in this? Like, were you not only just interested in the movie because of Soderbergh's genius for making things kind of engrossing, but were you actually, like, invested in these relationships? And did you think they played out well? I guess specifically Channing Tatum's Mike and Brooke, who was played by...
Cody Horn.
Cody Horn. I do not have any idea who Cody Horn is. Like, she looks so familiar to me, but I don't know what else she's been in.
I thought I was invested. I think part of it is because, like, they come from two different worlds, kind of. And that also works in with Pettifer's character, because it's kind of interesting to track, like, where the characters start and where they can end up and how, like, those two things can change so quickly. And so I think that was one of the reasons why I was so invested in it. But then there's also, you know, like, a lot of their scenes together are just really well written, like where they're walking along the beach and he kind of just follows them for a few minutes. And it's just like a really sweet scene.
It's a very long shot, too, which is interesting. But there are many extended shots in this movie that kind of, I don't know, I find that I sort of get more involved in the conversations when you're not cutting back and forth between them, because then maybe the dopey analytical side of my brain is thinking, oh, what does this cut mean? What does that cut mean? Why is he going there? Whereas, you know, it's not an issue of turn your brain off. It's very different, actually. It's just pulling you in more and more. I don't know. I mean, that's something that Soderbergh, I feel like he hasn't been doing for his entire career, but lately he's sort of picked it up, I feel like, maybe with the Ocean films or so. And I'm very glad he's done that, because I think it makes... I sort of get the feeling that he's not a director who's that interested in dialogue, personally. I think he is such a visual filmmaker. And so when he does these dialogues, he's sort of having his cake and eating it, too.
Yeah, especially when you get, like we were saying, like, this is a well-written script, and the actors that he gets are very capable of handling it. So I think that, you know, what you were saying, it allows him to not have to worry about them acting the scene, so he can set up, you know, the style and everything and get through that way, which works well in his favor in this film. Like, every dialogue scene, I was thinking about it. It was conscious. I was like, these people are just sitting here talking, and yet this is still, like, an incredibly dynamic scene, especially that one on the beach, the scene where they're having a beer at this go-kart track. I mean, there's something about his camera and his placement of it and the way that he has of shooting a scene that can make very simple things look like nothing else that you've seen and yet still have a very Soderbergh tinge to it. I don't know. I was, like, almost distracting throughout the entire movie, because I was like, this is a great scene. This is just two people talking. I've seen this done before, but not in this way, but I can still tell it's Soderbergh. It's like the banality plus the novelty plus the familiarity plus the alienness of it. It was weird. It was weird to me. And I'm sure that just because I'm a fan of his work, that increased that feeling even more. Like, I don't think a random person walking in would have that idea, but I know I certainly did. And yeah, like we were saying, I mean, this is the, if I had to level one complaint against this movie in a really serious way, which I guess as a critic I kind of have to, it's that they tease out this idea of Pettifer's character, Adam, as a troubled person. He apparently got into a fist fight that ended his career in college sports. And he obviously got into a fight with his foreman at the roofing place. He fits in pretty well with the male strippers, but he embarks on this escapade involving selling ecstasy, which just seemed, even for him, from what we've seen of him, pretty reckless and pretty half-baked.
Yeah.
And I just don't know if I bought that as much as I could have. I think he does a pretty decent job of selling it, but I'm not sure that the story does a pretty decent job of backing up the choice. Does anyone else have a problem with that, or am I alone in this?
I would say that maybe that aspect of him is a little underdeveloped, because you don't see as much of him as maybe I would have liked. Because it definitely feels like, in the opening, he's being established as the central character, but then as it goes on, it's very much about the titular Mike. And I don't know, perhaps I would have liked to see more of him and the different facets of his personality, because I've never seen Alex Pettifer or anything, but I actually quite liked him in the film.
Yeah.
I thought he was like an engaging screen presence, and I wanted to see how else what makes his character kick. And I feel like maybe there isn't enough of that in here. He's almost a little too successful, if you catch my drift.
No, I think I do.
He jumps right into this profession that he has no knowledge of. And it's actually sort of a problem I had with Boogie Nights as well, which is a movie people have been talking about. I mean, I love that film, too. I actually like it more than this. But at the same time, he kind of, just like Dirk Diggler, he does one or two jobs, and then suddenly he's on top of the world, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's a problem that a lot of these, like, rise to fame, you know, prodigal whatever movies have, is that, you know, it's difficult, especially because I don't know what makes a successful male stripper. So it's difficult for me to say, like, in a baseball movie, if I see a pitcher going out there for this first time throwing a no-hitter, I'm like, okay, well, obviously he's got talent and he's going to rise quickly. But, like, he walks out there and very awkwardly, the most that I've laughed in any movie almost this year is just him walking out on that stage and, like, almost like a half-asleep drunk guy undressing while walking to bed. And for some reason, people were, like, going nuts for it. And he left his socks on. Like, he had his boxers and his socks on. It was weird. But yeah, I don't know what makes a successful male stripper. So I do agree with that. Like, you know, there's a little bit of the training montage type of thing. And later on, you can obviously see that he's more of ready on the stage, like a more of an easy stage presence. But yeah, I definitely get what you're saying about not knowing where that was coming from. I can give you an idea as to why you haven't seen him in anything else. Because everything else he's in does not seem like the type of thing that I would ever want to see. I Am Number 4, Beastly, Alex Rider, Operation Stormbreaker.
Oh my God.
I did see him in Time.
I never saw that.
It was a movie.
Interesting.
Yeah, a bit of a letdown coming from the creator of Gattaca. But I did actually, I remember thinking that his character in that movie was pretty good. Though it was distracting because every once in a while I'm like, are we sure that that's just not a younger Vincent Cassell? And for some reason he had that look, and every once in a while I think I started to implant a French accent on him. It was odd.
He's not as lionish as Vincent Cassell.
Lionish?
Lionish. Like Vincent Cassell's like a human lion.
Okay.
A French lion.
A human French lion.
Yes. Okay. Someone make that image with Vincent Cassell's head on a lion's body.
Jesus.
Oh, God. All right. Moving on from that. The problem with this movie is, as good as it is, there's not a lot to say about it because it is very straightforward. There's not a lot of depths. Does anyone have any final statements they'd like to make on this?
It's great. It's a lot of fun. If you can see it with a packed audience, I would suggest doing so because I saw this with a friend of mine, my friend Mike, who's been mentioned on the show before, and because I only have one friend, obviously. And we saw this, and I think there were maybe four other men in the sold-out theater.
Yeah.
And it was just funny. First of all, I gotta say, I love how he uses the Warner Communications logo at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
That's just, I'm a nerd for that kind of thing.
I was won over right there.
Right, but I feel like, you know, you sort of knew what you were in for when that comes up, and it's just rapturous applause at that, because you know that it's starting. And it's part of the experience, too, I think. And it was interesting to see them respond pretty well to Soderbergh's film.
Yeah.
There seemed to be some uneasiness at the beginning when it's him at the construction site and whatnot. But I feel like the movie is structured very well, where you get back into the disrobing fairly quickly, and then he structures that so that you can get him and screenwriter B. Carroll and structured wrapped up in the characters at the same time, because this is who they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It becomes a lifestyle, and so you're in it once you're in it. I would say that you should see this with an audience as well. I think that would be the best way to see it, because I'm not the type of person to clap and wolf whistle at a movie, but definitely saw it with some people who are, and that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Danny, any final thoughts before we move on to looking at the week ahead?
Well, if I end up seeing it again in theaters, I just hope that no other girls yell, "She's not good enough for him," every time Channing Tatum starts dancing on a girl. That might be the one downside of the audience I saw it with.
That's hilarious. All right. Well, yeah, again, obvious. Everyone should go see Magic Mike. Great film. Surprisingly, like, don't let your friends try to talk you out of it because it involves male strippers. But yeah, moving on to
they're not excited for Soderbergh. Why are they your friends?
Yeah. Oh, well, that's an even better point. Moving on though. Let's, we'll talk about, the movies that are coming out on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a light week. I'm looking at DVDsreleasedates.com, and I see The Hunter, starring Willem Dafoe. God Bless America.
Like,
oh, did you see it?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. God Bless America is also coming out. We talked about that on one of our earlier shows, so if you want to know, you can go there for that opinion. And then that's really it. There's a movie called Jesus Henry Christ, which I've never heard of.
Oh, God.
And a movie called High School. And
oh, my God, that's coming out?
It looks like it's got Snoop Dogg on it. Which one, High School or Jesus Henry Christ?
Mrs. Henry Christ. Oh, God.
Okay.
Oh, I saw that at Tribeca in 2011. That movie is such a rotten piece of shit.
Okay, so don't see that, but you did like The Hunter.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great, because this is a little personal information about me. My favorite possibly extinct animal is the Tasmanian tiger.
Ooh.
So I need to see this film just based on that alone, because I love anything about the, I think it's called a thylacine. It's a scientific name. But yeah, Danny, what did you have an opinion about any of these four movies?
I mean, I like God Bless America. We talked about that earlier. And I thought The Hunter looked good. I just never saw it in theaters, but...
Okay, well, I think I might have gotten less positive about God Bless America. Still a decent film, worth a rental, but you're probably not going to want to see it again. And The Hunter, apparently good, and I really want to check it out. So that's that. Coming out this week, we've got a couple of choices. Obviously, The Amazing Spider-Man opens on Tuesday. Savages opens on Friday, as well as Katy Perry, Part of Me. And in limited release, we have Queen of Versailles, China Heavyweight, The Dodecapentathlon, and Crazy Eyes. I mean, we're obviously going to be talking about The Amazing Spider-Man, so I think we can all agree that that's something that people will probably go out and see, regardless of what we say.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard good things about The Dodecapentathlon.
Yeah.
And I do love the Duplass brothers, so I'm going to say that you should see that. And Savages looks interesting intermittently. I'm ambivalent towards it. What about yourselves, guys? Danny, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, we'll be seeing Spider-Man. I'm really intrigued by Savages just because I hope it's absolutely nuts. And yeah, I like the Duplass brothers also. So, and I've heard good things about that one too.
And Nick?
Well, I've seen the big light show coming out on the 3rd. And I won't say too much, but I actually did like it.
Okay.
Which I was not expecting to. So there's that. And then I'm looking forward to Savages. I think it'll be fun. I know somebody who's seen it who liked it. Rest, don't care about.
You don't want to see Katy Perry, Part of Me?
No.
Wow.
Jeez. Who would have thought? I will say, though, that Savages, you know, Taylor Kitsch is in this. And he's like in a 3-strikes-and-you're-out policy, I feel. Like, John Carter, no. Battleship, nope. Savages has to be a hit, I feel.
Is it possible Savages could save him? I don't know.
We will find out.
Yeah.
I know that that's not what we're speaking about next week, but I probably will have seen it by the time we talk, so we can give our brief opinions on that if that comes up. And now is the time when we give our random reviews and our random recommendations of what you've seen this week that you think other people should check out, not in theaters or new to DVD, but just in general. So, Nick, what about you? What did you watch that you feel like people should check out?
I don't have my Word document open in front of me, so I can't. What have I seen that I like?
You watched Kafka, I think, right? Soderbergh?
Oh, I did, yeah. That's very good, but it's not... You can't find that anywhere. It's very good, but ignore that recommendation wholesale because it's not going to do you any good. Maybe when it comes out on DVD or something, or Blu-ray, I don't know if that'll ever happen. Kafka was good, and what else did I watch? I've watched things I just can't remember right now.
Do you watch that many movies in a week?
Yeah.
I envy the shit out of you. I get to watch like 3 movies a week. It's awful.
I watch 3 an hour.
I don't know how the hell you do it.
Just ignore that comment.
Okay, well, I will say that I watched the first 10 minutes of Beginners 3 times last night.
Oh, wow.
Because it's on demand, Cinemax on demand, and I was like, I really want to see that. So I turned it on, and then the power flickered, and my cable box reset. So I was like, okay, well, I'll just start it over again. And, you know, it's like 10 minutes. I don't want to, you know, jump forward. So I just watched it again. And then the power flickered and the cable box went out. And I was obstinate. I was going to watch The Beginners. And then I watched the first 10 minutes and then the power just went out altogether. So I will say that, you know, I saw the first 10 minutes again 3 times. It was still awesome. And I assume that the rest of the movie also holds up. So you should see Beginners. Because it made my top 10 of last year, and I really like it.
Yeah, very good.
And it has the best performance by a dog in a film of last year, and I don't want to hear any of you Uggie enthusiasts giving me any information.
Tintin!
No, you're completely right.
Yeah.
Well, Tintin is close, but that's not a real dog.
Yeah, no, but it's a very cute dog.
Yeah.
All right, and Danny, what about yourself?
I watched Michael Mann's Collateral, which...
You guys know how to tie a tie, because I do not.
I know how to tie a tie, but I can't help you.
My dad ties my ties.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You should learn. Wait, what?
Wait, did you hear that?
Yeah.
Oh, all
right. Staying in. So you watched Collateral, Danny.
Yeah, yeah. I hadn't seen that since it came out. I really like it. I think it... there's like a kind of a 30-minute section in the middle that gets a little bit action heavy, but the movie's kind of filled with great conversation pieces, which isn't always what you think about when you think of Michael Mann, but I think it's a really interesting movie with, I think it has just one of the best pure looks of Tom Cruise's career. He has this like gray washed out hair and like this sleek gray suit.
Yeah.
And it's just like, he's just something to look at in that movie.
Yeah, I still, whenever I hear that movie, I think of that first poster that has him just sitting,
yeah,
you know, with the gun, and it's great. I love that movie. I don't know. I mean, it kind of ushered in this era of the digital photography,
mm-hmm.
for better and for worse. Even in some of Michael Mann's work, for better and for worse. Still not sure how I feel about Public Enemies.
I actually watched that recently too, and I love that movie.
I do love that movie, but there are times when I'm just like, it's weird that this is shot digitally.
Yeah.
Nick, have you come up with what you were going to say, or are you just going to stick with Kafka? Or are you even here?
I'll just stick with that. Mr. Connor O'Donnell, who occasionally writes for the site, just put a tie around my neck.
Adorable.
It's going to be so weird, like 5 years from now, if I go back and listen to this. It's like a sort of an audio recording of my day. Now I'm putting on my suit.
I was about to say,
I'm actually putting on it.
We've
I'm putting on a sleek gray suit, like Tom Cruise.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. Cool. Are you going to kill someone at a wedding?
Maybe.
That would be a good scene. I feel like John Woo would direct that, and there'd be doves everywhere. Okay, but that brings us to the end. Nick, we appreciate the sacrifice that you've made staying on the phone throughout this odyssey. So why don't you tell us where we can find you?
I know the... Jordan's already married now, really.
just hang with us through the ceremony, and we'll okay. podcast that out.
I'll just hold my phone up.
Okay.
Record that. Okay, so yeah, all my writings are at thefilmstage.com, and you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Nick_Newman, and that's it.
Awesome. Danny?
Personal blog, thekingbulletin.com, twitter.com/thekingbulletin.
All right, and I am at dearfilm.net, and my Twitter is twitter.com/BrianJRowan, Brian with an I. Thank you for joining us again, and thank you again, Nick, for this weird thing that's happened. It's good. It makes for good radio.
You know, I've always thought that you enter a special phase of a relationship with somebody when you hear their voice over a phone, because there's a level of trust there when
yeah.
you can call somebody with a phone. So not only you guys, but the however many people are listening to this who I will probably never meet.
That's a special level of trust.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's awesome. We should all feel very blessed. Just it's incredible.
And I would just want to give you an idea. In the span of this recording, I've gotten to the hotel. I've gotten to my room. I disrobed. I put on my suits, and now I'm ready to go.
That gives us the very uncomfortable image that at some point during this podcast, Nick was in some form of nakedness.
No, just my Batman underwear.
All right.
Jesus.
Okay. And to all you people at home, make sure to stop by next week when we talk about The Amazing Spider-Man. Make sure to give us a comment on iTunes. And hey, why don't you send us an email as well, podcast@thefilmstage.com. And don't forget to wish our editor-in-chief, Jordan, a very happy, healthy, and long-lasting marriage. So thanks again, and we will see you next week.
Cue transition.
I don't know if you're... I guess you're not embargoed, right? Oh, God, we lost him.
Yo, Newman.
I'm going to call him again.
Please enjoy this Verizon ringback tone while your party is reached.
This has to stay in the podcast.
I was
going to
say, this will either go at the end or I'm totally just going to keep it in.
Hello?
Hey, you're back.
Hey.
I love that ringback tone.
Oh, thanks.
Everybody keeps Vivaldi's Four Seasons. I don't know anyone who's actually programmed a new one in. Are you kidding me?
Jesus.
We lost him again. We've lost him again. Guy's got to get a better cell phone plan.
This is failing.
Your call has been forwarded to an automated voice messaging system. Is not available. At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To leave a callback number, press 5.
Jesus.
Newman, pick up your damn phone. All right, I'm going to try to call him again. If this keeps happening, we might have to abandon this enterprise.
Yeah.
Please enjoy this Verizon ringback tone while your party is reached.
The Primavera.
Hello.
Hello.
All right. Third okay. time's the charm. I think it's one of. I'd say it's.
Wait, we're losing you. Are you in the elevator trying to talk to us?
Yeah.
God, poor judgment.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, begin at the beginning.